Great to have you with us on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Happy to have you along today. You know, this past weekend, I wrapped a bunch of Christmas presents, and then I sat down and I wrote a few checks to some local nonprofit organizations that I like to support. And, you know, I did it now instead of next month because I wanted to take advantage of a tax write-off. And that's what we're going to talk about today, tax write-offs. And we have a great person to help us out, Mary Mellum, tax professional from Green Bay, Wisconsin. She's been in the tax business for 30 years. She and her husband, David, operate Ashwaubenon Tax Professionals. And in addition to servicing, 1,200 tax and accounting clients during the year, their business includes tax consulting for other tax professionals, as well as teaching tax seminars around the country. She joins us today from our Green Bay studios. Mary Mellum, welcome to the Ideas Network. Thank you for taking time to be with us today.
You're welcome, Larry. It's nice to be here.
I'm really happy to have you along today. I wrote those checks yesterday afternoon, and they're hopefully in the mail today sometime. And I thought, well, charitable donations, that's one thing that I can check off in terms of taxes, but I'm sure there are a whole lot of other things that you might do before the end of the calendar year to count for your 2014 taxes. And maybe we can talk about those a little bit.
That sounds wonderful. Where would you like to start?
Well, let's talk about those charitable donations. It's got to be a nonprofit, correct?
Your charitable organization has to be what's called a 501c3 organization. 501c3 is the part of the code section, the IRS code section, that allows the organization to be a charitable organization to do the right things with the money. And once they are a 501c3, then the donations that are given to those organizations are able to be taken as a tax deduction on your Schedule A.
Okay. I also pay my property taxes by the end of the year as well. And I guess you don't have to do that. You can let it go into the next year, but then you're not going to be able to qualify it for the 2014 taxes, correct?
For the majority of deductions that you want to take for the year, they have to be paid by December 31st. There are a couple of oddities like contributing to an IRA or making a deduction or making a contribution to a 529 plan that allow you to do those things by April 15th. But charitable contributions, paying your property taxes, paying state estimated tax payments that you want to count as a deduction before the end of the year needs to be done by December 31st.
Okay. What about contributions to investments? Is there some advantage to doing that now?
What do you mean by contributions to investments? Give me an example.
If you're going to be investing some additional money, is it a good idea to make those investments now?
That all depends. If you want to buy some stock before the end of the year because you know it's a good price, that would be something. You have to be a little careful at the end of the year with your mutual funds. If you buy mutual funds at the wrong time, you may get dividends distributed to you that really you probably don't want to have. Yes. Yes. And they may not – more like phantom dividends. So that's one thing I'm not sure. People tend to look at it from the other perspective and say, what do I want to sell by the end of the year so that I can either take advantage of the 0% tax capital gain rate or a lower capital gain rate, or I can realize a loss that's going to help reduce the rest of my income.
Okay. One of the big new issues that we really need to be aware of this year is that we need to have proof of health insurance.
You're exactly right. This is the first year for what we call the individual mandate.
And how do we do that?
Well, let me say it this way, Larry. The government is not ready for us. The law is here, and the government is not ready for us in the sense that they have not provided us with a document that is issued by the insurance company that says, I have health insurance, and you can take that to your tax professional, or if you're doing your own tax return, that you will have that information. So for this year, as a tax professional, we're asking our clients to bring us some other proof that they have health insurance, something like a Social Security statement that a senior citizen would receive that reports the amount of Social Security income that they receive. On that statement, there is a deduction for Medicare, which proves to us that they have health insurance. The law technically says that you have to prove that you have health insurance for each month of the year, and you can go without insurance for two consecutive months at most without incurring a penalty. And so we should see proof that you have health insurance for all the months. This year, like I say, because the IRS doesn't have a good reporting document in place, it means that we have to be a little bit more creative in what we ask for.
Oh, boy.
Yes, it's going to be a fun year this year.
And you say there's a fine if you don't.
There is a penalty, and it's a deceiving penalty because of the media, because of the reporting, people think that $95 is the penalty I will incur if I don't have health insurance. And that's only part of the story. The $95, there are two parts to the penalty for not having health insurance. It is the greater of $95 or 1% of your household income.
Oh.
Yes. So even though we've heard the $95 and $95 doesn't seem a lot, when you compare it to the cost of health insurance, that might not be the true penalty.
Yeah.
And beyond that, if it's a family, the penalty is incurred by every member of the family because every member of the family has to have health insurance.
Oh.
Health insurance is something that has to be had by a baby the minute it's born and by a senior citizen until they take their last breath.
Okay.
And the penalty is incurred. And when I say the $95, it's that's the portion that's called a flat dollar penalty. Adults are $95 in the household. Children under the age of 18 are half of that $95 penalty. But there is an overall maximum to that, which is 300% of the penalty or $285. But it's still the greater of. For a family of four, let's say, the greater of $285 or 1% of their household income.
Talking today with Mary Mellum, tax professional from Green Bay, Wisconsin. She and her husband David operate Ashwaubenon Tax Professionals. Great to have her along. And looking forward, we're going to go to John and Toma next and Paul and Spooner, but looking forward to hearing from you, too. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. With your tax question. You could also email us. The email address is talk@WPR.org, or you can post on our Facebook page. Go to the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page, post a question or comment there. Let's turn to John and Toma. John, hi. Thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
I got a question. I have a job that they offer a 401k, but I don't currently participate in it. And I was wondering if I can still just put money in my IRA and how much I can contribute and how much I can write off for tax purposes. And is there a difference? Because I'm 52 years old.
Okay. All right. Go ahead. I'm sorry, Mary.
That's a good question to ask for. The answer to the IRA is yes, you can contribute to your IRA. If you're not covered under a company pension plan, that means that nothing is going into your account for that company pension plan. you can contribute $5,500 as long as you have $5,500 of earned income. There is also a catch-up contribution that allows anyone over the age of 50 to make an additional contribution in that area.
Okay, however, so even if I don't contribute, so as long as I'm not contributing currently in my 401k, I can put the maximum amount in?
As long as there's no money going into your IRA, into your pension plan. And that also means that if someone leaves the company and has extra money left there and the company distributes the money, you have to watch out that you're not getting some benefit of that. Because if you are in a qualified pension plan, if you get anything, even though you don't contribute, if you're a participant in the plan, then your contribution, the deductibility of your contribution depends on a certain income level. And right for 2014, if you're a joint filer, if you make under $96,000, you can put money into an IRA and deduct the money. But if you are between $96,000 and $116,000, there is a phase out of that deduction, and over $116,000, there is no deduction if you are an active participant in a qualified pension plan.
There we go. Good.
Okay,
good.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks, John, for calling. And Paul and Spooner, your turn. Hi, Paul.
Good afternoon. You were speaking about paying your property taxes by the 31st in order to deduct your property taxes for this year. If I also paid last year's property taxes this year, will I be able to deduct both years of property taxes when this year's earnings?
The answer to that is yes. Property taxes are deductible on your home and any other property that you have in the year that they are paid, regardless of what year they are for.
There you go. That'll help you out, Paul. Thanks a lot for calling. Rod in Wauwatosa. Hello.
Yes, this is Rod in Wauwatosa. The question I have is, my wife received an inheritance in 2014. Does that have to be reported to the IRS before the end of the year? And how does one do it?
That's a good question, Ron. And the answer is, it depends. It depends on what kind of an inheritance.
Oh.
There are a lot of things that you can inherit. You can be the recipient of a life insurance policy, in which case it's rare that there's anything other than a little bit of interest that's taxable in a life insurance policy.
Mm.
If you inherit property, real estate, stocks, bonds, cash, that generally is not taxable either. But
okay,
if you inherit an IRA or an annuity or something of that type that has not been taxed before, that may be taxable. Usually, if there is someone that is handling the probate and estate work, if there is any income to be taxable, it will come through on what's called a K-1 from the estate. And the result of that K-1 is what goes on your tax return.
I see. So if there was something in the document that included the check, that would be the item to consult.
What I would recommend is that your wife, she was the one who was the inheritor, that she check with the person that's in charge of the estate to find out where they are in this process. Just getting the money doesn't mean it's taxable. There may be an additional payment or the final wrap-up that includes the K-1.
There we go.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling, Rod. Appreciate it. Taking a look at tax preparations before the end of the year and your taxes with our guest today, Mary Mellum, who is, she and her husband, David, operate Ashwaubenon Tax Professionals in Green Bay. I'm Larry Mueller. Christy Taylor, our on-air producer here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We're getting great tax preparation advice from Mary Mellum of Ashwaubenon Tax Professionals. You can join in. Give us a call at 800-642-1234. Email at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page. Go to the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page for that. And let's turn to Jim in Brookfield next. Jim, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. My question is this. I formed a 501c3 for the purpose of getting businesses to contribute money to the Mayo Clinic for the development of a particle beam cancer therapy facility to treat brain cancer in children. All of the money that I collect through money that I spend on my own to contact businesses goes directly to the Mayo Clinic. It doesn't go through any of my accounts. Now, I spend my own money on contacting businesses. So far, our contributions are a little over $2 million that has gone to the Mayo Clinic. My question is, can I deduct the amount of money that I spend for this purpose and the time that I put in for that same purpose?
Mike, you go ahead.
The question that you're asking, I need to ask more questions about it. You mentioned you set up a 501c3 organization, and you were granted tax-exempt status, correct?
Yes.
And the money that you're talking about spending, is it going through that nonprofit organization? Do you contribute it to the nonprofit, and the nonprofit is making the payment to Mayo Clinic?
No, I set up the corporation in order to obtain contributions from businesses, and that money, and I've got it set up on my website, goes directly to the Mayo Clinic. It does not go through any account that I own. It does not go through the 501c3 account at all.
Okay. If you are doing something on your own, then it would not be tax deductible unless you were giving it directly to the nonprofit organization, whether it be yours or whether it be Mayo Clinic. Because the important part about charitable deductions is that you need to be able to verify those deductions. And generally that means getting a statement back from the charitable organization that you have given the money to. If you are doing in-kind work for them, once again, you have to be associated with them in order to do that and be kind of a, I don't want to say representative, but even a volunteer for them, which also requires to have some correspondence. The IRS in the last few years has gotten very specific about what they are looking for documentation when people take charitable deductions.
Mm-hmm. Okay. That answers my question very well. And thank you so much for your help.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. And thanks as well for your good work, your good volunteer work. It's wonderful. Lee in Green Bay, it's your turn. Thank you for calling. Hi.
Yes. Good morning. I would like to ask Mary. I have a large parcel of real estate, around 160 acres. I'm over 65 years old. Would it be to my advantage when I sell that property to sell it on a land contract rather than the whole lump sum with capital gains taxes?
The answer is maybe. Now, to ask a little bit more about this, has this property ever been used in a business or is it strictly investment property?
It's just recreational wooded.
Okay, so it's purely capital gain property. Can you give me an idea of what you estimate your profit over and above your cost in the property would be?
Oh, my. $300,000.
Okay. If you do it on a land contract, if you put the $300,000 on top of the rest of your income, probably it's going to be taxable at a 15% rate for federal purposes. If you have substantially other income and you would get over $400,000 or $450,000, again, depending on your filing status, you could put yourself in a 20% long-term capital gain rate. So taking it over time could keep you in the 15%, and depending on your other income, it may even shift you to a 0% tax bracket. So yes, it could be helpful to do it on a land contract. Of course, there are some other non-tax reasons that a land contract may not be the thing you want to do. But from a tax perspective, it can make a difference.
Mm-hmm. There we go. Thanks, Lee, for calling. Appreciate it. John in Green Bay, it's your turn. Hi, John.
Hi. I have a question. If a couple, a married couple files separately, but they're both under one of their employer's insurance, if how is there something that has to be accounted for there? For health insurance?
This year, there is a special form that you will fill out, and technically it's a worksheet that says, if I don't have health insurance, here's how I calculate the penalty. The IRS, the only thing that they have done this year as far as putting together a form, there is a form that is for exemptions that I don't have health insurance because. And if I have to fill out that form, I could do that. On a married separate return, it really, if both people are covered under a health insurance and they were covered for the entire year, there is a simple box, it's about line 61 of page 2 of the 1040, that says I've been covered for the whole year, I check that box, and that would be all that you would have to do. If there wasn't coverage for the entire year, then there is some more forms that you may have to fill out to make sure that there isn't a penalty or to calculate the penalty.
Okay. I guess my question was a little more about, you know, my partner somehow gets, you know, the amount for both of our health insurance deducted from his check. Now, if I file separately, am I supposed to somehow, are we supposed to somehow do something
allocate,
with that number?
You need to allocate that portion to you. There is another part to this that says if you were someone who went to the health insurance exchange and bought your insurance from that, then there is a form that asks you to allocate that so both people potentially could take advantage of the credit. If it's employer-provided health insurance that covers both you and your partner, the only thing that you need to know is, am I covered under it? And so if your partner has – or if you have a health insurance card that shows that you are covered under that policy, that's really – and you've been covered for the entire year, that's really all you need for this year.
All yeah, right. For the penalty. But, when you're self-employed, which I am, you know, I'm allowed to take a self-employment health insurance.
Then you need to know how much of that premium is yours. And that you would need to have.
Yeah. Yep.
Okay. And for the year of 2014, you know, we won't have been married, and I've been paying my own health insurance, and I had a catastrophic plan, even though I'm 60. And I thought I'd get some documentation saying I was entitled to that, but apparently I was supposed to apply for it even though my insurance company sold it to me. And they said without some documentation from the marketplace, they can't sell me a catastrophic plan going forward.
The people that can buy the catastrophic plans are very limited. It's someone who has a hardship exemption or someone who's under the age of 30, I believe. But anything that is bought through the marketplace, there is a form that the marketplace, it's called a 1095 capital A, that the marketplace will be generating starting with the 2014 tax year that they will send to you if it was bought through the marketplace.
I did not buy it through the marketplace.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Then the health insurance companies are not required to report who they sell health insurance to this year. They will be in 2015, but they are not required to this year.
All right. There you go, John. Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. I want to give Shane in Menominee a chance to join us next. Shane, hi. Thank you for calling.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate taking my call.
Sure thing. What can we do for you?
Well, my question is, my wife and I, both about 31, 32 years old, we have two children in daycare. We're spending about $18,000, $19,000 a year in child care. And when we file our taxes, I believe they only let us claim about $6,000 per child per year. Is there any way we can claim the rest of the money that we're spending in child care?
It's a wonderful question, but the answer is no.
No.
The $6,000 that you're talking about is the cap for two or more children. It's $3,000 for one child, $6,000 for two or more children.
Okay.
The excess money is not a tax deduction. The only thing that you might consider giving more benefit, depending on what tax bracket you're in, if you have employer-provided daycare or not that assistance that you can get through your employer, that you can take it as a tax benefit to reduce your income. Up to $5,000 you could put into a dependent care benefit program, and that would save you some Social Security and Medicare tax on okay. that, as well as the income tax. So, and then the extra $1,000 you would get your 20% credit on that. But there's nothing to get beyond $6,000.
Okay.
There you go. Thanks very much for calling, Shane. Appreciate your call. Steve in Madison emailed and said, I've always taken the standard deduction for state and federal. This year I've had a lot of medical bills. Is there a quick way to determine whether it's worthwhile to itemize? Also, is there anything new for people who do use the standard deduction?
Let's take the easy part of it first. Is there anything new for people who use the standard deduction? And the answer is no. A few years ago, we were able to take a charitable contribution, a limited amount, and still take the standard deduction, but we don't have anything of that nature this year. As far as deciding whether to itemize or not, the standard deduction tells us if I have more than that, it is to my benefit to itemize. The standard deduction for a single person this year is $6,200, assuming not over 65, that type of thing. And a married return is double that. The medical portion is only part of that. And starting in 2013, because of the Affordable Care Act, the percentage that you had to meet before you got any deductions went up. And last year it went from 7.5% to 10%. So 10% of your AGI, the bottom figure on the front page of the tax return, has to be subtracted from your medical expenses before you have anything that counts towards the itemized deduction.
In other words, it's very hard to get.
Well, Larry, you'd be surprised. You would think it's very hard, but medical expenses are high this year.
Yeah.
And if someone is either paying their own insurance without the benefit of being able to take it as a self-employed person, if they're paying it out of their own pocket and they have any medical expenses, even though that 10% is high, we still see a number of people with medical deductions.
Okay. Well, good. And then, of course, all the other charitable contributions that you might make, get added in. And
your itemized deductions, you're looking typically, the people who itemize are families that own a home, pay property taxes, have a job, or have some kind of withholding source. Those are the three biggies. The charitable are pluses onto it. The medical, again, a little bit harder. You know, we don't too often see people who itemize strictly because of their medical, because of that 10% floor for the majority of people. If you're 65 or older, you can still go with the 7.5% until 2017.
Mike emailed us and said, my daughter lost her job last summer and it hasn't worked since. She didn't get or have health care since she lost her job last summer. What does she need to do?
If she did not have health care since last summer, and she had it for the first 5 or 6 months of the year, those months are not going to count against her as far as penalty is concerned. But I recommend that she look into the hardship exemptions. There are exemptions for being under the filing requirement. There are 14 different hardship exemptions that are possible to obtain. If you go to healthcare.gov, there is a list of those 14 different hardship exemptions. But if her income is low enough that she's under the filing requirement because she lost her job, that's going to be an exemption in and of itself.
Ah, okay. So some things to think about there. George in Monroe up next. George, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi, thanks. I'm self-employed, small business. I'm considering buying either a new or a used car, either, you know, right before the end of the year, right after the end of the year. Whether they renew bonus depreciation would have something to do with new or used. But my question is, if I buy it like on the last week in December, how do you handle that first year depreciation and then the subsequent years going forward? And maybe it's especially an issue with if they do renew bonus depreciation.
When you buy a new vehicle, you have to place it in service, first of all. You can take a 179 deduction on it. That's different from bonus, and it can be used for new or used vehicles.
Correct.
You have to, when it is a vehicle you use for business, because it's what we call listed property, there is a dollar amount that you can't exceed either in bonus or depreciation for that year. For this year, that first year is $3,160. And that $3,160 times your business use percentage is, ignoring bonus, is the max that you have to work with. Unless it's a vehicle that is a larger vehicle, that would give you a little bit extra. But your normal car.
Yeah.
Well, what about the fact that you're only using it for a couple of weeks in 2014? How does that impact this?
If you're using it only for a couple of weeks in 2014, you need to determine the business use percentage. And generally, that is the business miles over the total miles.
That's for 2 weeks, it's going to be 95% of 50 miles, say, you know?
It still is business miles over total miles for that time period that will give you a business use percentage.
Mm-hmm.
And that times your 3160. Ignoring bonus is the most that you're going to have. Last year's bonus was $11,160 that you were able to take. And so if Congress gets to enacting or passing legislation before the end of the year, that's a potential times your business use percentage. But again,
I got to ask again because it just seems so anomalous. Even if I only have it for a short period of time at the end of the year, there's no reallocation because I only had it for like 1/12 of the year or something like that?
Bonus is, or 179 is one of those things that allows you to do that. It's kind of like a gift, but it is considered depreciation taken. So if you turn around and sell it next year, even though you got this big deduction in this year, you're going to reduce your basis by it and in essence – pay it back through the gain on the sale of the property.
Wow, yeah.
So it's a timing issue, not really a gift.
Okay. All right.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot, George. Ken in Waukesha. Hello, thanks for calling.
Well, thank you. I always learn a lot on your show, and it's really fun. I really appreciate the service you provide. Well, compared to that last call, I have a pretty simple question. I'm 57, recently retired, and I want to sell some mutual funds that I've been holding for a long time. They're worth about $40,000, and two-thirds of that is long-term capital gains. We're already maxing out our contribution to my wife's 401k. We don't have any losses to offset the gains, and we're in the 25% tax bracket for federal taxes. Is there anything I can do to reduce the amount of long-term capital gains taxes I owe on the proceeds from that sale?
I think you said that you didn't have any sales of lost property, losses that you could offset against it.
That's correct. No losses, and I can't figure out any ways to reduce our income so I can drop into the 0% tax bracket for capital gains. So
are either one of you working? Anybody generating a W-2?
Yeah, my wife is. She works full-time.
Okay. Have you maxed out potential IRA deductions?
Yes.
Okay. So that would be one of the areas that I would have offered as an opportunity. Charitable contributions, if you want to do anything there, that could be an additional part to it.
Okay.
But if you have, you know, if you've exhausted putting money into retirement programs by whatever is available for your income level, there really isn't a whole lot that you can do to take advantage. You know, gain is gain.
Well, the market's been good to me, and it's a good problem to have. So.
Yeah, yes, it is.
A very good problem to have. And, you know, this could be a year to perhaps increase the charitable giving to one of your favorite charities. And that would work, wouldn't it, Mary?
Yes, it would.
Yeah, there we go. Good luck, Ken. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. You can join in, too. Give us a call with your tax question at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@WPR.org, or you can post on our Facebook page at The Larry Miller Show. I'm Larry Miller. Jennifer Dargan, now our on-air producer here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Taking a look at tax preparation, before the end of the year, but sort of tax preparation in general as well, with our guest today, Mary Mellum. Mary's a tax professional, works out of Green Bay. She and her husband, David, operate Ashwaubenon Tax Professionals. They service about 1,200 accounts. They also consult with other tax professionals and teach tax seminars around the country. So it's great to have her along. And again, thank you for listening in. Dorothy and Viola has a question, so let's go to Dorothy. Hi, thank you for calling.
Thank you. I have a question regarding inherited farm. And first of all, this year there was some income that came from the farm. And I'm on Social Security, retired, so I was wondering, can any of that income be put into an IRA this year? When it's farm income.
What do you think, Mary?
If you are involved in the farm as opposed to a passive activity, then if you do work in the farm and things like that, it is possible. But generally when it comes through the estate, it's usually you as a passive activity and you're reaping the benefits of it. Do you know if the farm is set up as a partnership or anything like that? Or does the estate operate the farm?
It's co-owned between my sister and I.
And your share of this income comes to you on a K-1?
Well, actually, it just comes... We rented, and we
okay,
have
so you're not rental. Actually farming. You and your sister are not actually farming the property, but rather renting it out?
Yeah, we rented the crop land.
Okay. If you were renting out the property, it is not income that is considered earned income.
Okay.
And therefore, it would not qualify for an IRA or any type of pension plan.
Okay. And then we sold this farm this year. And I was wondering, how would we determine the amount of capital gain? Because we did not have a formal appraisal done at the time that we inherited, which was about 3 years ago.
Did the person who died that you inherited the property from, did they have any formal probate done with it?
No.
How is it that the property passed to you without probate?
Upon death.
The cost basis that you have in that farm, if it was passed to you because of the death of someone, it is the fair market value at the date of death that determines your investment, if you will, into the property. So anything above that number is what your gain on the property is for the land itself. If you've got buildings and stuff involved in it, there may be some depreciation allocations, but you're going to need to somehow find a value for that property okay. as of the date of the person who died. And then if there are any improvements to the property after that, those would also create more what we call basis for you in that. But it's key to find out what it was worth. And it may be that you have to have an appraiser that has a time machine, if you will, someone that can go back to that date in theory and come up with a value for it in order to have somewhere to start.
There'd be some sort of value connected with it. And I would think an appraiser might be able to go back and look at sales of like
generally
property.
There is a way that people are able to do that, but it is very important to have something concrete to work with.
Yeah.
And usually there is an attorney involved, and with a probate, there is an inventory of the property taken, and somewhere, if you're using that, would be some kind of a number to work with. Otherwise, you're going to have to go back and reconstruct it.
Yeah.
All right. And then on the capital gains, can any of that go into an IRA?
No.
Probably not.
No. It has the IRA has to have earned income, which means it's wages, it is business income, or businesses that you are involved in through partnerships that you are considered involved in the business as there. Materially participating.
There we go. Thank you, Dorothy, for calling. Appreciate your call. I want to give Phyllis in Illinois a chance to join in. Phyllis, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thanks. I was wondering, I have not had to file taxes for the last 2 to 3 years because my income is low. I'm on Social Security only. So for 2014, I did have insurance. Does the IRS want to know that, or do I have to file now?
If you do not have to file a tax return because you're not required to file, you do not have to do anything to prove that you have insurance.
Okay, wonderful.
All right.
Thank you.
Yep, thanks a lot for calling. And Lois in Eau Claire. Hi, Lois.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I have another question regarding the health insurance. I'm calling for an individual in the family who to date has had no insurance, although working and fills out tax information every year. Now, he will be taking a new job within a week, and insurance is offered, so he will be signing up for insurance. However, let's say maybe it doesn't take effect until 90 days down the road, which would put it into 2015. Would he still pay the penalty for 2014 because he actually wasn't covered, but he had signed up for the insurance in the year 2014?
The penalty for insurance, for not having insurance, is on a monthly basis. So for every month in 2014 that you are not covered under insurance, you have the potential for the penalty unless you can meet one of the exceptions that are provided.
All right. That answers my question, and thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. By the way, you can join in, too, at 1-800-642-1234. Give us a call as we visit with tax professional Mary Mellum of Green Bay about your taxes. Brian in Wisconsin Dells up next. Hi, Brian.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. My question is, I'm on Social Security disability. My wife works part-time throughout the year, which she doesn't make much money, but what she does make, I would say, is roughly between $4,000 and $5,000. I'm wondering, is that enough earned income that we have three minor children under the age of 16, are we able to get the child tax credit this year?
Yes, you're able to get the child tax credit, whether it's going to be of value to you. The child tax credit is a credit that is $1,000 per child.
Right.
If you don't have any income, any tax due, the credit is not going to help you unless it flips down into the advanced child tax credit. And the floor for that is earned income minus $3,000. And that is going to generate some share of additional child tax credits. So I would say you have some. You're certainly not going to get benefit of $3,000. But there will be some, because her income is over the $3,000, that she will get as an extra refund for that.
I see. Okay, I understand. Well, thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks for calling, Brian. Appreciate it. And JB in Sturgeon Bay, hi, thank you for calling.
Hey, how are you guys? Thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
I worked internationally up until June of this year, and my understanding is the first $80,000 of earned income from my wife and I internationally is tax-free. I'm now back in the States, and as of August of this year, I've been working here in America. And I'm just wondering how I don't even know how to wrap my head around how I do my taxes this year.
I strongly suggest that you get help for that one. The $80,000 is the annual exclusion if you meet the test to be either a bona fide resident or have physical presence in the foreign country. The fact that you have come back to the United States is telling me that you're not going to get all of the $80,000. There is a proration of it as long as you have met either the 330 days, that there will be a proration for the number of days in this year that you're allowed that part of it. You're not, you know, the 80,000 is for the entire year. So you will get a portion of that based on the fact that you met that test using last year and 2014.
Okay. And then if I can ask one more, that when I returned back to the States, the company that I worked for was not a U.S. company, so I wasn't entitled to COBRA insurance, but what they offered me was some kind of a gap insurance where I paid, this is for health insurance, mm-hmm. which I paid out of pocket. Is that something that can be added or can be calculated into my taxes as out-of-pocket expenses?
If you're paying for
that I covered.
If you're paying for health insurance after you came back to the States, it's an itemized deduction that you potentially could use.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But I'm definitely going to need somebody to go through this with me.
The foreign earned income exclusion is a special form. It's called a Form 2555. And if you were gone from the United States for the entire year, it would be an easier $80,000 if you made more than that. I think the number is $80,900. But the fact that you are only gone part of the year involves an extra calculation of it and to make sure that you are considered being out of the country long enough to meet the test, first of all. Mm-hmm. So I strongly recommend that you seek some professional advice. It's a more involved process.
It is.
Okay, great. Thanks for your help.
Yep, thanks a lot for calling. I had the same issue many years back. I was gone for a year, but it was 6 months in each tax year.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember going to a tax professional for help. And it was well worth it. Well worth it. And in Milwaukee, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi, good morning. I have a question. I tried to sign up through the marketplace last December, and with all the hassles, I was never able to complete my sign up. So instead, right before the deadline on December 23rd, I did go directly to one of the companies that I had researched on the marketplace and applied for insurance directly. And it was my understanding after talking months later than with my insurance company in the marketplace that I could get this all resolved then on my taxes to get my tax credit then. But now that I'm looking at the new information on the marketplace, it looks like I would have had to actually sign up through the marketplace to get that tax credit.
You're exactly right. The only people who are eligible for the premium tax credit are people who have actually purchased their health insurance through the marketplace.
Yeah, and I think that'll be a big mistake. That was like $7,300. So I am kind of thinking of going to one of my federal legislators and explaining the situation to them, because obviously I would have done something very different had I known that before December mm-hmm. this year.
This year is going to be a learning experience for all of us.
Yeah.
I'll say.
Yeah, That could be an expensive one. Yeah. Thanks, Ann. And, you know, it never hurts to talk to your representative, does it?
No, it doesn't.
I think it's a good idea. Saeed in Fond du Lac, hi.
Hi. Yes, I have a question about the Section 179 on luxury cars. So it's less than 6,000 pounds, and I bought that car brand new. Can I take more than $3,160 depreciation, including Section 179?
The answer to that is no. A luxury automobile has a specific limit on the 179 allowed, and for this year, it is 3,160 times your business use percentage.
Uh-huh.
So is Section 179 allowed on luxury cars?
That is the max amount that is allowed on luxury automobiles, yes.
That's the depreciation, but I'm asking about Section 179.
179 is limited to the depreciation for that particular year.
Oh, okay. All right. There you go, Saeed. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Visiting today with Mary Mellum, tax professional from Green Bay, Wisconsin. She and her husband, David, operate Eschwabenen Tax Professionals in Green Bay. Great to have her with us. Certainly, you can join in at 1-800-642-1234. Give a call. Take a quick look at the news, and then we will be back with Mary Mellum. You stay with us. Great to have you with us on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hi, Larry Mueller. I took a look at the calendar and realized, you know what? It's almost exactly 4 months until we have to file our taxes. That's the deadline. And tell you what, we've got some great help for you today from Mary Mellum, tax professional from Green Bay. She's been in the tax business for a long time. She and her husband, David, operate as Eschwabenen Tax Professionals. They service 1,200 tax and accounting clients during the year. They consult other tax professionals as well as teaching tax seminars across the country. And she joins us today from our Green Bay studios, which is always fun. Mary, thank you so much for taking time to be with us.
You're welcome.
Really, really appreciate it. Do you have a website, by the way? I should have asked that earlier.
Yes, we do. It's called ashtaxprof.com.
ashtaxprof.com. And I think we have it up on our Facebook page. I'm pretty sure we do. So appreciate you being with us today. And certainly we have lots of people who have questions for you. So we won't waste any time here and go right back to our phones and to George in Milwaukee. George, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. How are you today?
Great. Appreciate your call. What's on your mind?
All right. Just a quick question here. If you opt not to pay for insurance, what's the penalty? How do you calculate the penalty per month that you'd have to pay?
The penalty is calculated based on the month you don't have health insurance, but it's a little deceiving. The penalty is the total yearly penalty divided by the number of months, the ratio of the number of months you don't have health insurance to 12. But the first thing that you need to do is to look at what, assuming a full year anyway, the penalty is the greater of $95 for every adult in your household who doesn't have health insurance, and half of that $95 for every child in your household under the age of 18. That's
all right. So if you got two adults in the household, it would be a penalty of $200 a month. Is that correct? Approximately?
No. It's the annual penalty. It is, first of all, the $95 times two would be the flat penalty.
So $190.
Or 1% of your household income. Your household income is, if you're filing a joint return, the easy way to look at it is your AGI. From the technical standpoint, it's your adjusted gross income plus your tax-exempt interest plus any foreign earned income exclusion that you might have taken on your tax return. So for most people, it's the bottom line of the front page of their tax return times 1%. And many times that's going to be more than the $95 times the number of people.
Yeah, that's as clear as mud to me. But I'll tell you, if you had an average of, because I'm going to retire, just figure $36,000 a year. That's about $3,000 a month that I'll get all together.
Okay. So if your AGI happens to be $36,000, you multiply that by 1%. And 1%, let's see,
365
$365. Say that again?
$365, isn't it?
Okay. And so 365 compared to 180, and you take the greater of the two.
And that is an annual?
That's an annual payment. Yeah,
I have to pay $365 is what
basically,
I
basically, you would have to pay $365. And you have the question of, is that less than what I would have to pay for health insurance? I mean, some people are going to make make that based on the fact that I'm going to weigh the cost of what it would take for me to buy health insurance versus this penalty that I would pay.
Yeah.
Setting aside the fact that if you were ill, it probably is going to cost you a whole lot more than that. But again, people are going to make that decision.
Yep. There we go. Good luck, George. Thanks a lot for calling. I appreciate your call.
For anybody that wants to go out and take a look at the calculation of the penalty, there is a form that the IRS has released, and it's a form 8965. You can get some information. It's released in a draft copy at this point, but you can find some information at irs.gov about that. Or if you go to healthcare.gov, where the insurance sign-up, the marketplace is, there's also information there about the penalty as well as the exemptions that exist for not having to pay the penalty.
Let's turn to Kathy in Lac des Flambeaux next. Kathy, hi. Thank you for calling.
Thank you for taking my call. And my question is regarding a 401k that I did not cash out when I quit my job, and now I'm able to pull it out because I'm of age. And we will be needing a car, so that's why I'm considering. I can apparently cash it in, which they keep 20%, I think, is the deal, or roll it over to some type of account where there's no penalties or taxes. And I'm not sure whether to do something this year or next year, but it's kind of like so we'd have money for a vehicle, which is probably, you know, better to buy at our age a decent vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
And that's my question, whether...
Which way to do it?
Cash it in this year or next? In other words.
Or if there's something more.
Okay.
Yeah. And I can take the answer offline.
Okay. First thing that when you are considering cashing in an IRA or a 401k plan, you have to look at your age and if you have any exemptions from the 10% penalty. Someone who cashes it in before they're age 59 and a half is subject to a 10% penalty over and above the fact that it's taxable on your tax return. So that's always something that you need to be very careful of, because it's not only the 10% penalty, but also another third of that penalty goes to the state of Wisconsin. So it's something to think about. If you are over that age, you have the tax consequences of taking it out. The tax rates this year are the same as they are, or should be the same as they are next year. They were the same as they were in 2013 because they were made permanent at that time. And so unless Congress would do anything differently, the only factor that you might look at is your income changing from year to year? If your income is going down next year, it might be better to wait till next year to take it out. Or you might want to consider taking it out in pieces to minimize the taxes on it.
Sure. Take out enough to pay for the car, perhaps. If there's money left over, leave it in.
Or if you want to buy the car and you're going to buy it in January or February of next year, you could take part of it out this year, put it in a savings account. If
Then
if it's not going to, you know, if too much would put you in another tax bracket or adversely affect you, where only half of it wouldn't be as much damage in one year versus the other, you could come, you know, take it out in two pieces to accomplish the same thing.
That could be smart as well. Good ideas. Kathy at Oshkosh, your turn. Hi, Kathy.
Hi. Thank you so much again for a wonderful program. I actually have two questions. The first is some organizations like the AARP are promoting a savings-type investment, and I'm wondering what the tax implications of that is since it pays a dividend. Also, if your child is being covered by your insurance and gets married, is he still covered? And I'll listen off the air.
Mm-hmm. What do you think?
Let me do the health insurance one first.
Okay.
If you have a child who is under the age of 27, they are able to be covered under your health insurance, as far as the federal law says. If they get married, they're still able to be, to the best of my knowledge, able to be covered under your health insurance. But with that other spouse there, that spouse can't be covered under yours because they're not your child. And if, you know, they get married and there's health insurance somewhere else, that could change things. But for the penalty purposes or exception from the penalty, while they're covered under mom and dad's policy, they're covered. And when they get married, they may have to report that coverage, the fact that they're under that plan. That would get them out of the penalty. I'm not exactly sure, you know, what else the question might have asked for beyond that.
Well, that makes good sense. Caroline in La Crosse has a question for you.
I think that we didn't address her second half of the question. Okay. So let me just, if you don't mind holding that.
Yep.
The second part of her question asked about a special type of investment that AARP was pushing. And I have to plead ignorance as far as knowing what that special kind of investment is. But if the investment is an after-tax, like stock investment, mutual fund type thing, when the dividends are received or when it's sold, it's going to be taxed just like any other type of investment that you have through a brokerage company. If they have something like an annuity where you are making those kinds of investments but under the umbrella of the annuity, it would not be taxable until you start taking distributions from the annuity.
Okay, there we go. Now let's turn to Caroline in La Crosse. Hi, Caroline.
Hello. I have a student loan, and I'm under the income-based repayment plan, and I called, and I've been under this plan for 13 years. After 25 years, it's forgiven. However, you do have to pay a gift tax because the federal government considers that forgiveness a gift from the feds. What is a gift tax? Is that more than regular tax? And this would be a substantial amount after 13, you know, after 25 years of interest have accrued on it, it would be a substantial amount. Do you have to pay that in 1 year?
I have to say that I've never heard of the government giving a gift.
Yeah.
When you have debt forgiveness as a result of something, the debt forgiveness would be a taxable event just like other income. And so sometimes that if you have paid for a certain number of years and you are forgiven the rest of the debt, it appears to be a gift. But for tax purposes, it is taxable income at the point it's no longer owed. And I believe that what you're talking about is probably debt forgiveness income. The government does have some programs that allows tax-free debt forgiveness income when you have, for instance, a teacher that's teaching in a depressed area or a doctor that is practicing in a certain area. But for the general public, it's usually a debt forgiveness issue, which makes it taxable at the point it's forgiven.
Yeah, there we go.
So you would have thousands and thousands of dollars?
Depends on whatever they deem is forgiven at that point. What I would recommend is that you get something in writing from them that tells you how it's handled. I mean, whether it's a gift or whether they see it under some special circumstances. And then I would seek a tax professional to help you interpret that.
Because if they're forgiving the loan each year, the portion each year, there certainly wouldn't be – I can't imagine they'd be charging you or taxing you on the interest of forgiven amounts over a long period of time.
It may be such that if you pay for a certain amount of years, then anything that's not paid at that point is forgiven at the end of that term, rather than so much being forgiven each year.
Yeah.
It depends on how the particular program is written. There are some special cases where they do nice things with it and have no tax implications. But more often than not, it's a debt cancellation issue that is usually taxable unless you have another exception to it.
There you go. Thanks very much for calling. I'm thinking back to my days as an undergraduate student when I got a student loan, a federal student loan. And, a couple of years later, I got a note from the government or a letter saying that they were forgiving the loans because they had some extra money.
That's very nice.
And they just sort of went according to grade point average. And I fortunately made that cutoff, and it was a couple thousand dollars, which at the time was a lot of money for me. Jeff in Madison, your turn. Hi, Jeff. Thank you for calling.
Yes, thank you. You were talking about the fact the IRS is a little behind the curve on this and doesn't have a form to approve health care. I'm just curious what might, because, for instance, and this probably applies to a lot of people, we're self-insured. It was not through the marketplace. It was one we already had, and we continued. The only transaction I have on a monthly basis is an automatic withdrawal from my bank or credit union account, actually. Would that statement showing a withdrawal going directly to, this is Dean Care in this case, or another HMO like that, would that constitute proof?
For 2014, I would say yes. Now, let me just qualify what I'm saying.
Right.
The IRS has a box that says, I've been insured for the entire year. Check the box if you have health insurance. Mm-hmm. If you haven't had health insurance, there is a worksheet that accompanies the Form 8965, which is the exemption form. Mm-hmm. And it would be up to you. It's kind of, a self-assessed penalty if you do your own tax return, that you complete that and calculate the penalty on it. If you are doing your own tax return, the one that you have to have the proof for is only if the IRS comes back and says, we don't believe you, show us. If you go to a tax professional, most tax professionals this year are going to ask you for some proof that you have it. Your withdrawal would certainly, if you could show them 12 months, that would certainly suffice. Yeah. Together with, I'm sure you have an insurance policy that says that you're covered under this particular plan.
Mm-hmm.
Could I ask one other quick question? It's not quite related, but just a really quick one. And again, it probably applies to a lot of people. I've got a son going off to university next year. If he is lucky enough to get financial aid, is that considered income to us? Is that taxed? I mean, a grant from the college?
If the scholarship or grant is used to pay tuition to the extent that it's used to pay tuition and books, then it is not taxable. If the grant can be or is used for room and board, then to the extent that it is over and above the tuition and books, it is taxable. And it's taxable to the recipient of the grant, which generally would be your son.
Okay. Thanks very much.
Thanks very much for calling. And John and Rhinelander, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hello. I have a question about
worthless stock. If a stock becomes worthless while it's in an IRA, can one write it off as a capital loss?
So it's a, okay, go ahead. I'm sorry.
That's a good question, but the answer is no. Indirectly, when you take money out of that IRA, you will get the loss, but you do not get to write off the loss when it happens. It just means that the balance in your IRA is less, and when you take that money out, there's less to take out, therefore less taxable.
There we go. Thank you very much for calling. Amanda in Pewaukee emailed, small business owner, started her business in 2007, but has not paid any Social Security taxes since then. Is there a way I can pay Social Security taxes for the last 6 to 7 years?
I believe that the answer to that is no. If you do not have a profit in a year, there is a special election that you can make for that year to show that you want to pay into the Social Security system. And that would be a way to pay into it and get some extra quarters of coverage. I don't really know for sure if you can go back. There's a 3-year statute of limitations that allows you to amend a tax return. It's possible that that would be something that you can amend. I've never had to try it. But that would be the only way that you could go back, and certainly not 6 years.
Chuck emailed to ask, are there any significant new deductions this time around?
I would say basically the answer to that is no. Our tax laws this year are pretty much the same as they were last year, except that the extender bill that we're kind of waiting to see what Congress is going to do would not bring us anything new. It would just continue what we had last year. The only thing that I can really think of new this year is on the state level for the state of Wisconsin, for families that send their children to private schools. There is a tax deduction on Wisconsin for private schools. But that's really the only thing that I can think of that is new this year that wasn't there last year.
Well, I tell you what, we've had, this has been great, Mary. We've had lots of questions, and there are still many folks still waiting online with questions, but unfortunately, we are out of time. I want to thank you so much for being with us today and hope that you'll be with us again. We'd love to have you back.
Well, I enjoyed it very much, and there's always a lot of questions when it comes to taxes.
Oh, yes. Yes, there is. Thank you, Mary.
You're welcome, Larry.
Appreciate it very much. Mary Millam, tax professional from Green Bay, Wisconsin. She and her husband, David, operate Ashwaubenon Tax Professionals in Green Bay, and she joined us today from our Green Bay studios. So thanks to the folks in our Green Bay studios for helping out there. Just to take a look ahead to tomorrow, oh, my good friend Dr. Carrie Donahue joins us. She has some great advice for keeping your pets happy and healthy. She tells us how acupuncture can be a great treatment for those companions. So we'll look forward to that, and I hope you'll just stay with us because there's lots more in store here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Stay with us.